You're listening to ESPN 100.3 FM, KLRZ, La Rose, New Orleans, and the River Region.
It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Hello, sports fans.
Well, hello there.
Local sports, national sports. The GCAT has got you covered.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Time to tee it up and let it fly. It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Your New Orleans Pelicans picking up the win as we just talked with Clifton Brown. This is going to be a tough matchup. Daniel Salerson will join us at 1:15 in our Pels Report brought to you by Dufresne Building Materials. We will focus on some of the other pictures that are starting to become maybe clear in the NBA playoff race. Alex Asaro in a matter of minutes. Little college baseball. LSU and Tulane coming up tonight. I did not El Gato Negro Southeastern Pepito. Stop shaking your head towards me. But first off, welcome to the Midway Point. Happy work week.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is?
It's hump day.
Hump day! I know you can hear me. Let's just
loop it. Today's more that Camel Wednesday, hump day, whatever it is.
Ah, yes. And welcome to the Midway Point of Your Work Week. Here we go, Pepito. Apparently, the competition committee recommendations on the catch. The wording has been deciphered. They're going to recommend it at the owners' meetings next week. It's three things on what a catch is. I'll tell it to you here in a second. First, words of wisdom. All right, so deliberation and input from coaches and players, NFL legends, club executives, the competition committee will recommend the following language. Simplifying the catch rule at the annual meetings next week. You ready, Jason? Pay attention. One, control. Two, 2 feet down or another body part. See, there you go. You lost me at what exactly body? Any body part? I'm kidding. Three, a football move, Jason. So you got to have control, 2 feet down, a football move. What is a football move? They give you three things. A third step or reaching, extending for the line to gain or the ability to perform such an act. Did that clarify it for you a little bit better?
No.
It didn't?
That was just a whole bunch of words and nothing you said was interesting.
Well, you know what's not on there? Having control after you hit the ground and all this other stuff.
Why can't they just make it simple?
That's as simple as you can get. You got to have control. In other words, there's a ball moving around. Okay, I have control. 2 feet down. Got it. A football move. A third step. Okay. Reaching or extending the line to gain. Okay, so if I catch it and I turn, that's a football move, and I'm extending to try to get the first down. Or the ability to perform such an act. If I'm doing anything like that, that's a catch.
But what was the rule before?
Well, you had other language. The process of the catch.
That's my point of why it was confusing.
Right. What was confusing was you had to hold on to it. You could roll five times like a ninja. And at the very end, if you lost the ball, it's no catch.
You know what they need to do? For every sport, when they have all these rules, they make it sound very legal, very professional. Just make sports rules for dummies. Just make the book, and every rule is in the absolute most layman terms so where everybody will understand it. That way the language doesn't get lost.
Okay.
That's why I should work for the NFL.
No.
Yeah.
The NFL does not need your mind.
No, they do.
Not at all.
They need more than my mind.
Alex Asaro, he is one of the co-hosts of Neutral Grounders. You can follow that over on Twitter at Neutral Grounders. And also follow Alex on Twitter, AlexAsaro3. Joins us once a week to talk a little college baseball. Alex, how are you this afternoon?
Hey, what's happening, Gus?
Did that clarify for you what a catch is, by the way?
Yeah, my goodness. You have to be in the end zone. Maybe if you're out of the end zone, it's a touchdown. I don't think even NFL officials know, but it's just a way to, you know, cover their tracks at this point, I guess.
I hear you. All right, man, let's talk a little college baseball. We spoke with Southeastern's head coach, Matt Reiser, yesterday. I don't think El Gato Negro'd him. They lost 6-1, but even he said it, and you said it weeks ago, South Alabama's a very good baseball team. Southeastern's still a pretty good baseball team, 16-7 overall.
Yeah, they're riding that, what, five-game winning streak up until that South Alabama game. A solid weekend series sweep of a good Lamar team out in Beaumont. So a really impressive win. The rotation's really coming around, but falling against that team kind of broke up their winning streak, but they're more than capable against this upcoming weekend against Houston Baptist, a sort of a lower power in the Southland Conference world.
One of the things, obviously, that Matt Reiser has been able to do over the last couple of years is, you know, have some successful seasons, Alex. It's always been about trying to get into regional play and almost having to win conferences and stuff. Do you think if you continue to have the number of wins that they have, that eventually some of that level of respect comes, or is that just where that conference is, where, you know, sometimes you have successful seasons with win totals, but you don't get into postseason play?
Yeah, and that's a lot what you saw last year with UL Lafayette, another solid team, had a pretty good conference record, but fell short in their conference tournament and didn't really have the, you know, out-of-conference games to really back them up. And that's something Matt Reiser always pushes, is playing some of the best teams. You know, you've seen some of the out-of-conference opponents that they've played, one being a win against LSU at home at the Pats. This is a team that right now in RPI is sitting at around 130-something. So, you know, they still have a full season to go. This is the first weekend of RPI rankings releasing. But these guys, you know, they need to get these out-of-conference wins. But, you know, sweeping last weekend is big for them. But the Southland is definitely a conference that's kind of coming around. Last year we saw Sam Houston State, a team, make a huge run into the postseason. And Southeastern's definitely one of those two. I like to compare them to Coastal Carolina a few years ago. Every LSU fan knows what CCU did when they came into Alex Box, but right. Southeastern's more than capable of being that team. Last year, I kind of predicted them to be that, and I guess when all roads run through Baton Rouge, it makes it a little more difficult facing Paul Mainieri and Alex Box every summer. So that might be one hump that Reiser has to get over, but until that day comes, Still a threat in regional play every year.
UNO 9-12, 2-4 in conference play so far, as the Privateers will be getting into action this weekend at Central Arkansas. Played Ole Miss in a weird time yesterday at 11 a.m. Lost 9-4. It's going to be a battle for coach this year, you know, Coach Dean, in terms of just trying to, I guess, recoup some of that hitting as well from last year, but you've seen some nice wins, and at times just that pitching sometimes has to be there.
Yeah, I really like how you mentioned that 9 a.m. start, because I saw on Twitter that they Ole Miss did a nice thing where they actually just invited school kids to have field trips there so that they, see? I guess, can actually have an audience. You mm-hmm. would rather play with someone watching instead of no one watching. So I guess some four-year-olds are a better audience than an empty seat. But you're right, UNO, you know, they've just kind of strung together wins and at times nothing that's really stuck. But, you know, I feel like this team is much like Reiser. You know, the young Southeastern with Matt Reiser at the helm, you know, kind of just a young team that's trying to figure out who they are. The beginning of last year and beginning of this year, really, they really stood out with their ability to hit, but still kind of finding themselves in the middle, you know, kind of middle of the pack in the Southland. So, you know, I mean, Southland Conference play just started last weekend, so there's plenty of time for this team to turn it around. But I'm waiting for, you know, something to really pop. With Southeastern, for a long time, you couldn't really say what was their forte besides just being excellent base runners and just doing the right thing. And I'm kind of waiting for that to really show up for these Privateers. They're a team that just kind of seems to be a middle-pack team. So just kind of waiting for, like you said, the pitching to come around. This team might make a shine this year.
All right, LSU and Tulane today up at the Box in the first of two, as they always play throughout the season. For Tulane, kind of an important game, right?
Yeah, Tulane, we've talked throughout this year how it feels like LSU's midweek games always seem to be Jack Holstaff or Johnny Holstaff. Tonight you're going to see Nick Storch, a highly touted guy out of Brooklyn that a lot of Tiger fans are excited about. But for Tulane, they, you know, really go for it. These non-conference wins are big, much like Southeastern. The American Athletic Conference holds a lot of weight, but not as much as some of these other conferences. So Josh Bates is going to have toe the rubber tonight, have a you know, a little bit of a challenge here in Alex Box. But we saw last year Tulane's more than capable and comes out and plays these games. So a big game for Tulane indeed. They head into important weekend series against Cincinnati, but you know Travis Jewett's worrying about taking down that team down the road.
They won twice last year. They've actually won four in a row against LSU, and I'm sure they'll be using some motivation over for the Tigers. How nice was their conference opening win against Missouri, though?
Yeah, LSU came out, definitely showed right out against Missouri. Actually underrated Southeastern conference team, team that just barely missed the tournament last season, probably like the last team, maybe the last team out when it came down to it. But a strong Missouri team, and you know we saw really wanted to. You know we saw Mikhail Hilliard still hang in there, go long. I don't know if we had talked since he had towed the rubber against Hawaii, but you know gave up his first runs, but I guess that eventually had to happen. But still sitting at a 0.77 ERA, a freshman who's going out there pitching on Sundays that may be changed, but for a guy who's gone out two weekends in a row, once against a great non-conference game against Hawaii and then against Missouri is really impressive. And, you know, you've kind of seen a shakeup at third base. I really like the adjustment of Chris Reed at third. And eventually you're going to have Josh Smith back. So this team, you know, those bumps and bruises everyone was worried about with the injury to Watson and the injury to Smith and A.J. Labus not being able to pitch, you're finally starting to see some of the pieces and parts that Pulmonary puts together to drive his team up to Omaha every year.
Alex, tell folks about Neutral Grounders, the podcast, and how folks can give it a listen.
Yeah, keep up with us on SoundCloud. We're also on the iTunes podcast app. You can find us on Twitter, Neutral Grounders. Anything you want to know about Tulane, Southeastern, we have UNO, LSU, UL Lafayette, anything in college baseball in Southeast Louisiana, you'll find it there.
Thanks as always, man, for appreciate your time, and we'll talk again next week.
No problem. Good talking to you, Gus.
Yeah, for sure. At Alex Asaro 3 is the way to follow over on Twitter. And an interesting tidbit in the game notes that I did not know this, and I bet you some of you don't. Pepito, I know you don't. The overall series, the Tigers lead the Wave 180 to 130, three ties. And the series began with the first intercollegiate athletic event in LSU history. So the first thing they ever did in a sports program ever was LSU Tulane baseball. That's interesting. It was a 10-8 win, and it happened back in 1893. As I mentioned, the Wave have won four straight over the Tigers the past two seasons from 2011 to 15. LSU had the better of the Green Wave nine of the last 10 meetings during that aspect of it, but four straight for Tulane, and we'll see. Pulmonary 13-9 against the Wave in 12 seasons. Coaching over at LSU. Nick Storrs, Josh Bates going on the mound for the Tigers and for Tulane. I know you're giving me the look. It's not the same Josh Bates that's coming on at 2:30 for the three count, Pepito. Take the quick break. We come back. It's time for Daniel Salerson and our Pels Report brought to you by Dufresne Building Materials. We'll take a look at the greater picture in the Western Conference. Pels got some help last night thanks to a 6-0 run by the Celtics with 16.8 seconds to play, knocking off Oklahoma City 0-884. That was the record when teams trailed by five or more in the final 20 seconds of a game. Up until last night. It's the Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans. You know, when you don't have your second leading scorer, you need guys to step up. Ian Clark, 19 points. Shaq Diallo at 10 points. Rajon Rondo, 19 to go with 14 assists. Anthony Davis on the play of Rondo and Ian.
Rondo made some big plays. Went up to the line, made two big free throws. They made the three to seal it off, and Ian just played well throughout the entire game. So, you know, they're both a huge force, and, we're going to need that, like I said, for the rest of the season, especially this little stretch that we got.
Indeed. Help us preview not only tonight, but also talk about the rest of the Western Conference playoff pictures. Daniel Salerson of the Pels Radio Network. You can catch that game tonight at 7 o'clock right here on ESPN New Orleans. Daniel, how are you doing, bud?
I'm good. How are you, guys?
Dude, this is nuts, right? I mean, I love this. It feels like a playoff atmosphere. the Pels apparently cheering in the locker room when the Celtics knocked down the three with 1.2 to play to take the lead over the Thunder and steal that game, and it helps.
Yes, it certainly does, and I was doing post-game show with Jim Eichenhofer last night, and I definitely did a fist pump whenever he was in the middle of talking. He was probably wondering what the heck I was doing, but I was watching it live in our studio, and that's what's the best part about this, especially when you see the Pelicans win. The scoreboard watching is so fun. We did it last night, even on the way home with the Jazz losing to the Atlanta Hawks, who only had five road wins heading into last night's game. So this is the best part of it. You're not only having to worry about yourselves when they win, but you're also paying attention to what other teams are doing. And there's so many other teams that you're involved with. It makes it really exciting.
Daniel, one of the things that's interesting when you look at this game tonight is both teams – kind of, I would say surprises, right? We just spoke with Clifton Brown, who covers the Pacers from the Indy Star, and he goes, hey, look, they've exceeded expectations. I would easily say the Pels have exceeded expectations twice, because even with Boogie Cousins, I was like, man, if they would win some games that they've lost that they shouldn't have, they could be competing for the fourth spot. They lose Boogie Cousins. And here we are. They're doing the same thing. So I think very similarly to what Nate McMillan is doing over in Indianapolis, it's, you know, two teams battling for the fourth seed right now.
Yeah, and it's two teams that have lost a superstar, except the Pacers lost theirs before the season even started with Paul George. As soon as Paul George left for Oklahoma City, they got Victor Oladipo back in that trade, and Victor Oladipo should easily win most improved player, in my opinion, and he's been phenomenal this year, making the All-Star team. Miles Turner has evolved. You got Sabonis in that deal as well. They're just playing some really good basketball this year, and then you look at the Pelicans, who have done well without DeMarcus Cousins. They struggled early, but have bounced back. And now both teams, as you said, Pacers are fighting for that fourth spot right now. Pelicans just a game back of the Thunder for the fourth spot. So both teams are really in similar situations, and this also makes for a very big game tonight at the Smoothie King Center.
One of the things from last night that really stood out as well, not only a lot of the people stepping up, but here's a tough one for you. Who you think had the bigger impact in guys that stepped up? Ian Clark, Shek Diallo?
I would say Shek Diallo in the Boston Celtics game, but I would go with Ian Clark yesterday against the Dallas Mavericks, and only because he had Drew Holiday out due to illness. Of course, when your second lead scorer is out, you need other guys to step up. And Ian, in his last 11 games, is averaging 12 points per game, shooting 51% from the field. And heading into that game, I mean, think about the first 33 games for Clark, averaging almost just 5 points per game in 15 minutes. So he's a little bit more aggressive. He feels a lot more comfortable right now. He's feeling confident. And I think he's the one that really stepped up in the win against Dallas. But I think both of them have really contributed as far as the bench scoring has concerned. Check, I think, really did it against the Celtics and against Greg Monroe. But I thought Ian Clark was the star last night for New Orleans.
So you take a look at the rest of the night, Daniel, that took place, and you mentioned Jazz losing, Clippers losing, Blazers, man, have been playing great with 13 games. Are they a surprise as well in the West?
The Blazers are certainly a surprise in the West. You're asking the Blazers, correct?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, for sure. The Blazers are definitely a surprise. I think everyone sort of sees the Blazers as a team that really no one talks about. They always play games late at night there on the West Coast. You have Damian Lillard, who is an underrated superstar that has really carried this team, a true leader for the Portland Trail Blazers, has never bailed on them. Every time that, you know, you thought they wouldn't do well, they exceeded expectations, especially when they lost LaMarcus Aldridge. And they have the two-headed monster of him and C.J. McCollum. I didn't think they'd be 17 games over 500, but they're beating the teams they should win on their schedule. They're also, I think, not saying that it's luck, but they're catching some breaks as far as facing teams on injury situations. They've beaten the Warriors twice when Golden State has not been healthy. They caught, the Celtics, the same as the Pelicans did, with not being healthy. So the Blazers are just playing really well right now. I expected them to compete for a playoff spot. I did not expect them to be a three seed right now.
I know you got to keep looking at scoreboard watching, but obviously one of the things you can do is just take care of your business. 11 games remain for the Pels, including tonight. I thought in this three-game stretch, Daniel, going 2-1, I'm high-fiving. I'd be ecstatic. 3-0, you lose Saturday, you lose Saturday. Because I don't know how you're going to have any legs going up against Houston that knocked off Portland last night. So I look at these three games here, and if you can go 2-1, it could really help you here. This one's a really tough matchup, though.
Yeah, for sure. And, of course, I agree with you that 2-1,
I would be perfectly fine with. But I want to get greedy now and go for three in a row because, like you said, you're facing a tough Houston Rockets team on Saturday, and you can just be playing with house money on Saturday. Look, you maybe rest a guy like Anthony Davis and say, hey, let's just play, see what happens with the Rockets. They're starting to gain such a big lead on the Warriors. Maybe they begin to start resting guys. They're now up four games on Golden State just because of all the injuries to the Warriors. So I think it's something that you can go 3-0, and if you do finish this back-to-back-to-back 3-0, then you're starting to build a nice, comfortable lead, at least on getting into the playoffs. Right now, you're three games ahead of the Nuggets and 3.5 games on the Clippers. The Nuggets are right now on a 7-game road trip. They've gone 0-2 so far, including a loss to the 19-51 Memphis Grizzlies. And then the Clippers began a 4-game road trip last night. They lost to Minnesota and play Milwaukee tonight. So the more you win in these next two, the more ground you gain on the Clippers and Nuggets, which would at least solidify you a playoff spot. Now you get greedy and talk about seeding, whether you can jump the Thunder and get the 4 seed, or if you can catch up with the Blazers and get home court in the first round, or if you just avoid being 7th or 8th to play Houston, Golden State in round number one.
Daniel, last thing here. We're getting closer, obviously, to the playoffs here coming up next month. And maybe it's because I was paying attention to Boston, and we've seen the Celtics kind of be a story twice this week, right? Tanking on the Pels and last night beating the Thunder. Maybe it's because of the news that's going on in Cleveland here as well, a team that the Pels will play here at the end of the month to wrap up the month of March. It's Toronto doing what they do. I think these playoffs are going to be fun. I really honestly think so. Unlike last year where we were just like, it's the Cavs and Warriors, just get it on with it. I was looking forward to that series, but they too were kind of clearly the best. You knew it was happening. You go to the season before that, you knew it was happening. I'm not so sure this year, Daniel. And look, I'm not, you know, I haven't been drinking, but I don't know if Houston, I think Houston Pels in the opening round, that's going to be a tough series for Houston. They've been good games. They've played the Warriors good. I don't think they're deep enough to win four, but my point is, I don't think it'll be a waltz or a, you know, 13 or 12, sorry, you know, what is it, 8 or 10 in a row that you would win. I think you're going to see a lot of games, 6s and 7s, I guess is what I'm trying to say jumble-wise.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of fun matchups, and I don't think if you're the Rockets, you don't want the Utah Jazz right now in the first round with how well they're playing since Rudy Gobert has been back from injury. Look at Minnesota, if they get Jimmy Butler back before the playoffs start, who knows what kind of team they could be. They were up at the 3 seed before Jimmy Butler got hurt. Now they're on the 7th seed. So, of course, Kawhi could be back for the Spurs in the playoffs as well. So you're talking about superstars being added back to clubs in the Western Conference, which means no series is going to be a given. I don't care if you're Houston or Golden State. Those games could easily go to 5, 6, or 7. And then you look at the Eastern Conference with some of the bottom teams. The Milwaukee Bucks are always a team that could scare you in the first round with Giannis Antetokounmpo. The Sixers right now are the 6th seed. I think a Cavaliers-Sixers first round would be very intriguing. And then you would have right now a Celtics-Cavaliers Eastern Conference semifinals if both teams were able to advance. So the Raptors have been playing really well. They've been flying under the radar, which I think they're okay with. But it's going to be very interesting come the playoffs with some of these matchups because, like you said, I don't think there's going to be that many sweeps. I think there's going to be a lot of ones that go to Game 6 or Game 7.
Yeah, no doubt. Should be fun. D. Salerson is the way to follow him over on Twitter. And you can listen to Daniel tonight as the Pels take on the Pacers, 7 o'clock right here on ESPN New Orleans. And the rest of the way, just 11 games remaining. Should be an interesting one tonight. Thank you, bud.
Thanks, bud. I'll have my poncho on ready to go tonight.
I know. I love that. Poncho's being given away today for the rain makeup game tonight over at the Smoothie King Center. When we come back, Glenn Gilbo will be chatting with us about the Tigers. Is it a good thing or a bad thing that the defense shut out the offense in the scrimmage over the weekend? Is it time to read into it or not? Also, his take on the LSU basketball season coming to a close. I love this headline. Will Wade was ready to jump into Lake Pontchartrain following the loss at Tulane. Since then, he feels better about his basketball team. That's up next on the Sports. At LSUB tweets, the way to follow Glenn Gilbo over on Twitter. And, of course, read any of his fun little articles. What's up, Glenn? How are you this afternoon?
Fun? Fun article.
Yeah. Well, fun to go with their fun Wade quote that you tweeted there. Full steam ahead. So this time next year, we'll be preparing for the Sweet 16 as opposed to sitting at home. You wrote a piece about the basketball team. And I love the headline in what you were saying. Basically, you want to jump into Lake Pontchartrain after the loss to Tulane. How would you kind of look at Will Wade's first season as head basketball coach at LSU?
Well, it was really up and down throughout the season. You know, Tulane was not a very good team, and he lost that game, and he was very upset after that game. He told us much later, at the end of the regular season, he told us that story about Lake Pontchartrain. But, you know, they beat Michigan early, which is still in the NCAA tournament. They play A&M, which they beat twice. But, you know, after he beat Michigan, he got blown out by Notre Dame. After he won two road games at A&M and Arkansas, you thought, wow, this is an NCAA tournament team. But then he lost to Georgia at home. They were very up and down. All the way to the end, his last regular season game, they beat Mississippi State by 21, then loses to him just a few days later in the SEC tournament. You know, played very well against the Cajuns and then really just got hit in the mouth early against Utah. So I think it was an up and down all year. It could have been a really special year, but it ended up being where they were pretty good team, okay team. But when you compare that with how bad they were last year, two SEC wins, and they were picked to finish 14th last in the SEC this year, you got to say that that's a very good year compared to last year.
I will say this as well, Glenn. I guess if I'd ask you, what was the one big thing that he brought to the program that you would take in a positive way going into next year? Is it the recruiting class he was able to get because of some of the success he had this year? Or was it maybe some energy going back into the program?
I would say he's the first coach they've had probably since Dale Brown, who looks like he can recruit and coach at the same time. You know, they've had guys that were kind of inconsistent with that. And Dale was inconsistent with his bench coaching, but the overall program he had, it was elite for a decade, okay? No one can argue with that, with Daddy Dale. But, you know, Coach Brady was a heck of a floor coach. He had some probation he inherited, but his recruiting was inconsistent. They were up and down. And then Trent Johnson didn't even recruit. He was a good X and O coach that did not recruit, didn't even try to recruit, really. And then Johnny Jones was basically all recruiting and not much bench coaching. So now you've got a combination, finally. I think you can see that. I mean, he's bringing in the number four class in the nation next year. He's got 2 5-stars, 2 4-stars. Tremont Waters is probably going to be the only guy who still starts from this team. So this guy can recruit and coach because he showed that he can X and an O it this year. Mm-hmm. So I think the future looks really, really good. I was surprised at how quickly he recruited so well.
Speak with Glenn Gilbo. You can follow him over on Twitter at LSU Beat Tweet. Covers LSU. Of course, we'll touch on the Saints here briefly in a minute. One of the things, Glenn, that when you look at, obviously, how this team is going to sort of go into next year, I love the fiery attitude. I'm referring to, obviously, what happened with UL. And you really saw that side. You saw that throughout the season, though, in games. I mean, he gets into it. I love the energy and emotion. And I think it's easy for a fan base to sort of get on it and on board for it. Do you think that UL game maybe helps next year, get some people maybe out to games that have been on the fence?
If he plays UL again. he ought to play UL every year. I mean,
I agree.
There's no good reason not to. And in fact, his own argument says that he should play UL every year because he said a couple days after the game, he said, and this is a really interesting viewpoint by Will. He says that he's all for playing a very good in-state team, you know, because it can help his RPI if they're good enough to help his RPI. And he wants to play them on the road because that helps their RPI even more. You know, it's like a win and a half or 2 wins if you get a road win. And the way he sees it is, it's not it's easier to get a road win in state because you're going to have half the building with your fans. Whereas if you go play North Carolina State or somebody like that, you're not going to have all your fans there. So that's a great viewpoint on that. And but he wants it to be a good in-state team. Well, UL's been the best in-state team the last several years. I mean, they've won 20 games a year consistently. Their RPI's not always great, but neither was LSU's this year. So now UL's probably not going to be that good this coming year because they lose a lot of people. But I think, the Cajuns are the only in-state team, really, that kind of gets the fever going among LSU fans. They don't like to admit that because they like to say that they don't matter to them, but they sure do pay a lot of attention to the Cajuns. And this was definitely the most atmosphere at a game all year. If not the most, it was tied with Kentucky or maybe another SEC game. So, he's hot and cold. Some games he's kind of calm. Other games he's really been into it, like Alabama. I don't know how much that, really affects the team. We got to see what kind of real strategy coach he is next year because he doesn't have the excuse of not having, an inside game or something like that. He's got everything. He's not going to have any matchup issues next year.
It'll be interesting to see once that team gets onto the court with what, as many people say, is the third-ranked recruiting class in the country. Let's switch on over to football. Speaking with Glenn Gilbo of Gannett News Services, USA Today covers the Tigers at LSU Beat. Tweet over on Twitter. So I read the headline that you have up there, right, that the defense shuts out the offense. And I go, uh-oh. Is that a good thing or a bad thing, especially with defensive players, Glenn, saying, hey, last year Matt Canada's offense tore us up. It was great to get back at him. And I'm sitting here going, if you're an LSU fan with maybe a few beverages already in the morning, you're going, you see, am I reading too much into this?
A few beverages in the morning on a Wednesday? Not even a game day. Well, I guess you could be drinking for the Tulane baseball game.
Oh, they're out there drinking for LSU Tulane. You know they are.
It's not even St. Patrick's Day, man. I think, that shouldn't be that big a deal because the defense is going to be better than the offense this year. So you would hope that they can shut out this offense. I mean, my goodness, they got no tailback at the moment. They got no real quarterback at the moment. And they're kind of rebuilding the offensive line. So I would hope, Aranda could, handle that offense. I mean, it's spring football. I don't read a lot into spring football. Never have, but I will say this. I mean, part of the media's job, I believe, is not selling the readers and listeners a bill of goods. I mean, I would tell LSU fans, it's probably not going to be a great year offensively. And it might not be a great year overall this season. I mean, this looks on paper, which is what we go by. On paper, it looks like a 4 or 5 or 6 loss team to me. Now, stranger things have happened. I've heard good things about Miles Brennan. He may be a good quarterback, but they're still missing some key ingredients to being a better than average team. As far as the offensive line might be good. Worried about tailback. The receivers they got some guys coming back, but they haven't really done much. So there's a lot of questions on that offense.
And I guess that's how I look at it here as well. I mean, I was talking earlier in the week. I said, I think more importantly, it's going to be a defensive laden team or that's going to have to lead sort of the way. And look, you don't start off really easy. I mean, you're going up against the Hurricanes, and you'd probably think, Glenn, they might be a top-10 team.
Well, Miami does lose quite a bit from last year, but, so does LSU. I mean, you look at all the stats from that bowl game, they're all gone, just about. Chark and Geis and Etling. Miami is not as formidable as, say, Georgia, which they play this year, but it's gonna be a tough opener, and their schedule is tougher than it was last year, and they lost 4 games last year. So
on paper, you know, it looks like it could be tough, but you know, you still got to go with what you think you should do, and they need to build this passing game with Miles Brennan, even if they have a so-so season, because then you're better the next year. And you know, hopefully they'll keep the same offensive coordinator for 2 years in a row.
You can follow Glenn over on Twitter at LSU Beat Tweet. And of course, you can read them online too as well. Gannett News Services, USA Today, The Works, on the Twitter. It's real easy. You can go find out anything that he's posted up there, including all the different interviews. Glenn, thanks as always for giving us a little bit of your time this afternoon, man. Have a good week.
Okay, Gus, thank you.
Yep, for sure. Pepito? It's weird. I'm so used to, and so ready to doing, you know, qualifying for WrestleMania. We're done. We've hit all 10 qualifiers. So we have to wait until, obviously, April 3rd on Tuesday.
Final drawing. Right. Two drawings.
I know.
Correct?
Yeah. Two winners out of 10.
But we have SmackDown tickets tomorrow.
I was going to say, that was my lead-in. We have SmackDown tickets. We'll be at Walk-Ons tomorrow in Houma. And I don't know. You can just register. We'll just have a sign-up sheet. So when you come in, look for the table wherever we'll be broadcasting. I love to tell you. I don't know. We'll find out
when we get there. That's how this works usually.
But when you walk in, we'll have a sheet reminding you right at the hostess stand. And just go find the table. We'll have a registration list right next to us. Just put your name and number. And then that way we can contact you when we draw. So two pair of SmackDown tickets. And they're nice. Nice seats. 100, you know, 100 level.
Yeah, really good. Really good sections.
For the
good
Tuesday
seats there.
Show. So I have them in my possession. So I will have them tomorrow. And looking forward to that. Access tickets on their way as well.
To give you access to access.
I see what you did
Saw
there.
That, huh? Wow. Saw that.
I can't do it. I'm so used to doing this for the last 10, 11 days. I'm asking you a trivia question for anything.
Okay.
Just for fun of it.
All right.
Ready?
Yeah.
Yesterday, during SmackDown,
mm-hmm.
Daniel Bryan, before he fired
mm-hmm.
Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, said, we go way back. We started out together.
Yeah.
15
years or so, yeah.
What did they start out in?
As all pro wrestlers do, you start out playing or working in the small little gyms and armories in front of, you know, 300 people. That which is a good number, 300
people,
actually.
When he said that, I was like, well, Pepito, you said you wrestled in front of 25?
I've been in front of 25. I've also been in front of 325. It's weird. You never know what you're going to get show to show, man.
25.
It's happened,
but
man.
But you have to bring it.
You got to bring it. Those 25 people paid to watch the show. Yeah. You got to put on the show. And then next week you go and it's 500 at some other gym.
If we were a tag team, what would it be called?
I would never be a partner.
See, we already got a really good heel tag team thing going on.
Absolutely never be your partner.
What would be our tag team name?
I wouldn't
ESPN
be your
Radio
partner.
NOLA. Sports Hangover continues next on ESPN New Orleans. Pepito, if you can, a little top stories coming up here. Coming up next hour, the three count. Jason, we'll touch on that with Jason and Josh coming up at 2:30 right now, though. A couple of NFL stories that are interesting.
Here's a look at what's making news. Let's check out the Sports Hangover's top stories.
You know, I said that on purpose just now, right? Since you told me I use interesting a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
I was seeing if you picked it up.
I mean, I've gotten so used to it at this point.
All right. Anyway, so let's see. Next week, the owners' meetings in the NFL are going to be taking place, and the competition committee will recommend the following language. They've decided, they've deliberated, they've discussed, they've asked players, coaches, executives, NFL legends, you name it. Help us define what a catch is. Here it is. It's three things. Ready? Number one, control. Number two, 2 feet down or another body part. And three, a football move such as a third step, reaching and extending for the line to gain, or the ability to perform such an act. That's what a catch is, Jason.
Makes sense.
I think it is more simple. It's not have to control it through the process of a catch, process of hitting the ground, rolling over and all. I know what control looks like.
Simpler than it was
before.
Are
you controlling
the
ball,
way.
Right? Yeah. I mean, I know what that is. You don't see language such as, is the ball still moving while you're, no. Do you have control? 2 feet down, I can tell that. Or a body part. An elbow, a knee, a shin, right? Shoulder. And a football move, a third step. Starting to run. Reaching and extending the line of game. Trying to get that first down. Or even a touchdown. Well, the ability to perform such an act. In other words, I'm in control. I'm making a controlled effort. I think that makes sense. And I think they can be able to do it. Elsewhere. That has to do with the NFL draft. Jason, are you a big fan of the NFL draft?
First couple rounds.
I tasked you to be a part of the NFL Network's 52-hour coverage of the NFL Combine,
yeah.
And you failed.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
You blatantly just refused to do it.
No, I just completely refused to do it.
Yeah,
yeah, I didn't
even
try.
Even though I tasked you to do
you
so.
You did. You tasked
producer.
Me to do it.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean I'm going to do it.
No, you said no, you weren't doing it.
Yeah, straight up.
You didn't even think about it.
Executive decision.
You didn't
say
I'll do some of it.
No.
You just flat out said I refuse to do it.
I just said no.
All right.
No.
Well, what about the NFL draft? Well, you have Pepito's publishing guides available at any of these walk-on remotes?
I got tons of them.
Well, if you do, then they will be available tomorrow at walk-ons at home.
Boxes upon boxes. Come out and get them.
We're not seeing them tomorrow, are we?
You don't know that.
I do. I think I do.
Let me check the sales. Uh-huh. Yeah, we're sold out.
Oh, shockingly.
We can get more. We can get more.
Well, if you like watching the draft, you can really choose who to watch the draft with. So, you know, it's been ESPN and the NFL Network, Jason, that's done the draft, right? Well, now the NFL announcing today a new partnership or extending the broadcast agreement for the NFL draft as they are adding Fox to this now. The draft, which will take place Thursday, April 26th through Saturday, April 28th from AT&T Stadium, home of the Cowboys over in Arlington, will now have the NFL Network, Fox, ESPN and ABC, ESPN2 and ABC. All having different simulcasts and live coverages. The expanded coverage giving the NFL draft its largest audience ever reach. And it also, per the release, marks the first time ever that the entirety of the live 3-day event will air on broadcast television. So Jason, I know you're eager to find out how to view all of this, not only on your TV, smartphone, PC, tablet, live apps such as the NFL app, NFL.com, Fox Sports and ESPN apps, Apple TV.
If you don't have one of those, then...
There is a way to watch the NFL
goodness.
Draft. For example, round one, 7 p.m. is when it starts, 8 p.m. Eastern. NFL Network, Fox, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN Deportes, NFL Fox Sports... and ESPN Digital Properties. ESPN2 will also be doing it just like ESPN, only they're going to do it in a, I love how it's described here, a college-themed, unique college-themed production to supplement ESPN's coverage. So you're basically going to have the college game day crew
doing
the NFL
draft. Yeah.
Speaking to them about, and they'll be showing highlights of them in college and talking to them what they did in college. And then you flip over to ESPN, it'll be the analysts talking about how they're going to help the NFL teams. Overkill?
You think? I mean, I don't watch past the second round, so.
Round two, Jason, on Friday. 6 p.m., an hour early, because you got two rounds on Friday. It's rounds two and three. NFL Network, Fox, ESPN, ESPN2, NFL, Fox Sports, and ESPN Digital Properties. On Saturday, noon Eastern, NFL Network, ABC, ESPN, NFL, and ESPN Digital Properties. Are you excited about all the different ways?
Oh, I'm so pumped for
this.
I can't wait.
And a serious question, because they're moving the draft around everywhere. Would you go if it was here in New Orleans? If it was in the Dome?
How much are those tickets? Because they sell tickets, right? Or is it free?
Because
I don't know that.
I don't know. I think it's free.
If it's free, they're stupid.
I think it's free.
Right?
No,
You wouldn't charge for that? I'm sure fans
Will charge if you want to like be on the floor or something.
VIP type experience.
I think it's free.
So maybe free to the general, free to get in, but you may have VIP packages.
Think it's free like for the most part to go in there and be in there. But I mean, the concessions and all that.
I'm surprised it hasn't been here yet, to be honest with you.
Well, I'm sure it's probably, we could have asked Jay Cicero that.
Good job, Gus.
Ruined the interview. I would. I think I would. To go see the spectacle.
If it's free, I'd probably check it out.
But would you
for
sit
the first
all the
round?
Way up in like row 33 in the terrace?
No.
I would rather watch it at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I don't care enough to go all the way out there and sit in a nosebleed
I'm
to watch
too.
It.
I would too. I care, but I really care around with a Saints pick.
Yeah,
I care about... If I'm going to be there like the entire day...
I care about who the Saints pick in the first and second round. After that, I'm like, I hope they're good. You know, I just...
You'll tune in Monday to the Sports Hangover.
Exactly.
We'll go over it. Okay.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for... But, again, Pepito's Guide to Publishing, shouldn't you be on top of this?
Oh, I'm on top of all that. That's what you're going to get in the guide. It just gave you a sneak peek.
A sneak peek of what?
The draft. Coming to New Orleans.
Okay. I have no faith in your draft, by the way.
I would charge you to get into the draft.
Why would you charge me? It's free. I'm pretty sure it's free.
Why don't you look that up? Be a producer, Gus. Be my producer. Look it up.
Why don't you look it up?
I'm busy hosting the show.
Sam Darnold, his pro day is today. He's the USC starting quarterback, or was the starting quarterback for USC. Wonder where he's going to go. Between Baker Mayfield, Josh Rosen, the UCLA quarterback, he said Rudolph's been thrown in there as well as maybe the top ones. Baker Mayfield, by the way. Joey, you ready? Set to work out for the Finns, the Jets, and the Cleveland Browns.
Yes.
Although,
I thought he was going for Holyfield.
Although, what? Head coach Hugh Jackson already came out and said that Tyrod Taylor was the starter. There's no controversy. I think that's a smart move, honestly, Joey. Isn't that a smart move? For the head coach to say, hey, look, no matter who we draft, if it's a quarterback, next year's starter is Tyrod Taylor. It's done, it's over with. There's no pressure on an incoming kid to do that. And I actually think it's a smart move, to be honest with you, to come out and
just
say.
It's a trap.
Why is it a trap?
Because we're going after Holyfield, not Mayfield.
Okay. See? Poor Cleveland Brown fan. Okay. It is what it is.
Check out Pepito's book. It'll tell you everything.
Duh.
I don't know. So, the NCAA tournament, right, the one-and-done style sort of tournament, has a lot of people that get excited for the March Madness. When we come back, I'll start off with this. LeBron James says the NBA is just fine with this postseason structure. Not what's being thrown out there right now. Could you imagine a one-and-done sort of play-in game in the NBA playoffs? Would you like that? We'll discuss that. Plus the three count coming up in hour three of the Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans.